Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nyssen on our Sunday evening. We've just watched Liège-Bastogne-Liège men and women's. Men's recap first. If you're watching on YouTube, the women's recap is a separate vid. Liège parcours for the men is 260 kilometers long from Liège to Bastogne and then back to Liège in a clockwise fashion. The main climbs that you should really bear in mind are Côte de la Redoute with about 35 Ks to go, 2 Ks, 9%, and then Côte de la Roche or Fourcon, 1.3 Ks, 10.5%, short descent, then Boncel, 1200 meters, 6.5%. They're about 13 to 10 Ks to go, then 10 K descent, flat sprint finish, headwind on those climbs, headwind in the sprint finish. We knew that for the men's race because the women's race preceded it. The rider said very strong headwind in the finish. But before we get to that action, I want to mention our show partner, Lecole, lecol.cc. They are our show partner for the entire year. We're going to hopefully get over to Europe. And, well, I'm going to get over to Europe. I believe Benji, in theory, lives there already. I'm going to get over there. And maybe we can do it to our Tour de France shows in person. That is with Lecole support. If you want to check them out, they're in the description below, or you can check out their kit, their performance cycling apparel in on their Instagram. It's pretty much just a digital collection of it all. I just got some new kit, which has been good in the autumn here. But anyway, men's Liège, God, it was a snooze fest. Like, this is the climbing version of MSR. I said that in the preview. Nothing happened in the first 230 Ks of note, I guess, 60 Ks to go. Greg Van Avermaet attacked, got brought back. I think it was Tosh van der Sander, not even Gilbert, who was attacking for Lotto. Three riders went clear. There's a break, obviously, a suicide break with the Pro Conti teams and Carp the Road at like 3 minutes. This is before Redoute. And then Mark Donovan on DSM, Han van Hocker and Lotto Soudal and Padoen for Bahrain. Yeah, okay. Padoen for Bahrain were in a group and they got allowed to have 90 seconds, and then Ineos took their foot off the gas, went up to 4 minutes again, and pretty much the brake just started to drop itself from fatigue. We got to the Côte de la Redoute, all the favourites are there, Pogačar's had a puncture but got back, and something did actually happen on Redoute, Benji. The race started to open up there with 36 Ks to go.
Yes, it was a team that we, well, a few days ago would have said would ride all out for Pidcock, but Pidcock went ahead and said nope to LBL because of the crash he had at Flesh, so they were here without him. And the team of Ineos just moved forward. They had the options of the likes of an Adam Yates, for example, a Carapaz, those kind of riders. But with those riders, you need to try and open up the race early because you don't have that punchy effect on Rocher Foucault to try and follow a punch by Alaphilippe, for example. So that's what they did here. They saw Laredoute and move forward with the entire team. And one of the MVPs for that team today was definitely Tao Gegenhardt. He's getting better in form for the Giro, it seems, because, yeah, that was good for the Tour. My bad. Is it Giro? Tour? Tour, right?
He's doing the Tour. He's doing the
yes.
Tour.
Yes. On Laredoute? Okay. On Laredoute, they came forward. They smashed it from the bottom. And
no Pidcock.
That's true. And at the bottom, they just hammered it in the sense that the people that were in their wheel, they were unable to attack because when Sevenand was getting ready for an attack on Laredoute, you saw him on the right of the road just pinching his head out and was like, okay, I'm going to move up. But yeah, Gegenhardt kept on pedaling hard and he put up a massive, massive pace because at the back of the peloton, we saw everybody just having trouble to follow. And at a certain point, we saw a bit of a gap open up, I think in 22nd position somewhere, where we basically saw a group getting away. And that included the four Ineos members at the front of the race, including likes of Carapaz, Adam Yates, Hart as well. And I think Dunbar did a lot of work for the team there as well. But that gap actually split up a few favorites that were left behind at that point. And a few of those were Alaphilippe, who only had Van Zevenand in the front group, and I think Davinens as well, but I'm not totally sure about that. We saw Roglic having trouble for a second to try and follow the first group, but he bridged up and actually closed it down just before the top of Laredoute. And I think the other favorite that was not in the front group there was Valverde. So two of the people that we certainly thought would be in the final of this race were not really there at this point. And this Ineos coup on the reins was definitely a looking like a chance for them to try and put the reins upside down and perhaps put themselves into a position where nobody really expected them to be, with a numerical advantage on everybody else with a good 35K to go. So what a move there. Did you think that they were going to set it up that they would keep on pacing until like Foucault do something?
I did. I think they, I don't know what stopped their action. Maybe because they realized, oh no, we've got Roglic, Valverde in this group and Pogacar. Pogacar was bang on.
Valverde wasn't.
Kwiatkowski's wheel. What's the point in bringing three quarters of the sprinters or reduced bunch sprinters we're concerned about? So it all came back together. And then they got to this little climb before Côte de Roche or Faucon called the Forge climb. And Ineos went again with Gagan Hart. And I think not having Pidcock here today, it obviously changed their strategy massively. They wanted to use their depth in numbers. They did what I thought Bahrain would have tried to do with Poles, Haig, Padun, Dylan Terns, who were kind of anonymous today. And they went again with Gagan Hart and got an even better split this time, dropping Roglic. And Alaphilippe was now in this group, still with Valverde in the group. And then, kind of like what they did with Amstel, they attacked with Carapaz, Benji, and it immediately went out to 20 seconds. I think they had Quiero and who else had in that group? Just about him and Carapaz, they attacked. And did you think, I don't know, did you think that was the best option? Did you think they should have tried to work together? Do you think, again, there were too many quick guys in that group, so that was the best option at that time, and then hope that Quiero could sit in the wheels and, you know, I think they should have tried to nurse Kwiatkowski a bit more before onto Côte de la Roche or Faucon, personally.
Honestly, I don't think that their strategy of having Kwiatkowski as main leader here would have been the best idea, because so far in this Ardennes season, so far I felt like Carapaz was the better rider and ended up, I think, sixth or seventh in Flèche Wallonne as well. So he's doing extremely well so far, and I think that he should have been the rider they were hammering it for here. And with that attack, they reduced the advantage they had with the numerical advantage on the others to not having that advantage. And that group was quite simply getting caught back by the people behind. And the problem there is that, well, you're basically choosing to have Carapaz at the front in a race where everybody who scouted the weather for the race knows that a headwind is coming up off to reach climb to the finish line and in the last portion to the finish line as well. So it's not going to be a great idea to attack with a solo rider at this point. Perhaps it's an in-race decision at the same moment, but even if you're with the fast people that you are with, you're getting rid of the likes of an Alaphilippe if you keep on pacing and if you keep that strongly together. And I'm afraid that, I'm afraid that wasn't an ideal strategy in my eyes.
Who was chasing
it? It was Movistar, because I'm still 99% sure Valverde was not in that group, actually.
I feel like he was in that group because I was watching him all day, because he was my pick with my heart. Maybe he wasn't. Everyone can comment down below. I'm just a relentless Valverde stan, obviously, but it doesn't really matter whether he was in that group at that point or not. And I can say that because I was probably wrong, apparently. But Carapaz 20 seconds ahead, but everyone got their act together behind before the final climb. They chased him down. The final climb comes about 14Ks. So, as I said, about 1.3Ks, 10.5%. Movistar chasing, as well as, I think, UAE. Pogacar's there. And they get, I think they do catch him before the final climb. And it's UAE. Oh, by the way, Luke Vlieghen at some point has been caught. He got as much camera time today as when Ineos, more than when Ineos were pacing, with like the whole team shredding the race, even though we'd been watching for 2 hours when nothing happened. Côte de la Rochefoucauld, UAE setting pace. Formulo, I think, I'm not sure if he or she was just in the wheels or set pace. He was up there. And then they created a bit of a split. Roglic was already getting distanced. He'd already had to do some work beforehand. And it was Mike Woods, very consistent in Liège. He attacked on Côte de la Rochefoucauld, and he was followed by Pogacar, Alaphilippe, Valverde was in this group, and David Godu. So the five riders go clear. No Roglic, no Schachmann, no one from Bahrain, and no Fuglsang, even though Aramburu had been riding for Full Sang earlier, which Benji and I vehemently disagree with. Did you think at that point, Benji, with five different teams, a lot of the big contenders represented, even with the headwind, it was a done deal?
I think that it was a done deal. I think that
agree.
The riders that I expected to be in a chasing group or in an attacking group, in a lead group from that point onwards, were kind of the riders that were in there. I think that we all relatively expected Valverde to be able to follow the likes of Pogacar on this climb. I expected Pogacar to be able to follow a Woods on this climb. Who did I expect to be in here? Well, Roglic, and he just wasn't really there. The entire day he was a bit looking like in the distance, chasing everybody. And I believe that, that's not ideal. And I think that I expected more from him today. After last year's victory, I kind of just expected more, but that was not the case. But yeah, that group was certainly a group that was moving towards a potential victory here. I didn't see the others coming back, and we saw a helicopter view at a certain point that confirmed that for us, that the others were significantly behind as well. So we went ahead to descend where Fuglsang had his tire slip. Can you remind us of the sound that made back in the day?
Was that it? I can't remember. But it wasn't wet today, so there were no tire slips. Mike Woods, though, they got to get him off the front on the descent. He's letting the group behind come back quickly, which is mainly Roglic and Schachmann pacing behind a large group, but dysfunctional. Kwiatkowski trying to attack here, Fuglsang attacking. They'd work together for a little bit, pulling turns, and then just disintegrate the cohesion. So group one, going ahead, they get into the last 5Ks. They got 30 seconds, which isn't that long. We see Mohoric on the descent behind, reminding you we've gotten the group. Valverde barely pulling, refusing to pull after Rochefoucauld for ages, then eventually pulling. Pogacar pulling like an absolute truck, as well as Mike Woods. Alaphilippe doing a good job, and Gaudu as well here. And we were thinking, Menji, what's your Gaudu do? I mean, what's the go-to for David Gaudu? And, I mean, he's not going to win the sprint, we think, but there's no real uphill to attack. It's descent. I think Mike Woods, after they got off the descent, tried something under an underpass. They then helpfully cut back to G2, but he was shut down by Alaphilippe pronto in the last 3Ks. And then we got into the final, I think the last kilometer, 1K to go, and they all start track standing. Alaphilippe takes the last corner super wide. He goes to the back of the group, and then Pogacar's like, no, I'm going to go to the back of the group. Pogacar literally, I thought he'd had a mechanical or something. He just like he was going to pull off. They went down to 20 Ks an hour. Eventually, Valverde starts to lead out this group of five with, I think, Hirschi chasing behind with Teish Benoot at 500 meters to go. And I was like, what the hell are you doing? And Valverde leading them out. Woods on his wheel, Gaudu third, Alaphilippe fourth wheel, Pogacar fifth wheel. Headwind in this sprint will affect it a lot. Valverde kicks at 275 into the headwind, nearly gaps Woods, but Woods gets back into the wheel. Gaudu kind of nowhere, can't kick around anyone. Alaphilippe goes to the right-hand side. Valverde was on the left-hand barrier. Alaphilippe right-hand side, going quick, goes really fast past Woods and Valverde, passes them easily, but Pogacar, perfect positioning, right on his wheel, gets the slipstream for the longest out of anyone in the group of five. We know he's quick, comes round, Alaphilippe doesn't chop him, and beats him pretty comfortably in the reduced bunch sprint to win Liège-Bastogne-Liège, the first winner of a monument after winning the Tour the previous year since Bernard Hinault in, I don't know, 79. I just stole that fact straight off Le Flamme Rouge on Twitter. I'll claim it. What did you think of that sprint, Benji? Valverde showing a lot of inexperience, not even being ironic.
Yeah, Valverde was sitting at the back of the group almost the entire descent and pushed twice at the front, relaying. And at that point, I was like, yeah, he's doing what he usually does, just sits at the back and waits until the sprint arrives and thus tries to swamp people. But that was not the case, because in the last 1K, he decided to take the front and do the lead out for everybody. So really no clue what he was thinking. Definitely with the headwind, Valverde should know better. It's harsh to say, but I think he should know better. I think in the last 700 meters, he tried to get to the back, but Woods was like, nope, not going to happen anymore. You ain't getting behind us. And everybody just started breaking behind him to keep himself at the front, to keep Valverde at the front. But I think when it comes to this sprint, we can highlight a few things. We hadn't seen Gaudu sprinting against others that much. I think Roman Dihi won a group sprint once, if I recall correctly, a few years ago. And I knew he had a bit of a punch. I expected him to come in the top four of the sprint. I just didn't know where. And now we have a bit of a reference to see what he can do against the others. So that's what I love about this, because now we know that Pogacar and Alaphilippe are somewhat on the same area. You know, the Valverde sprint is not looking as great as the past for certain. We knew that already. I said it in the preview. You didn't, right? Sorry.
No, I said his sprint was good at Amstel. And I think his sprint is still as good as Pogacar. And the difference today was positioning. If Pogacar was put on the front and led them out with 275 in the sprint, I don't think he's winning either. So I think it was more positioning than anything with Valverde. But no, I agree. His sprint is clearly not like 2014 Valverde sprint. Like, I don't know. I think people were going at Benji for his comment about that. Like, I said his sprint was better in Amstel than 2020, where he was terrible. But Benji is correct. Valverde's sprint is not like peak.
To the benefit of the people that were going at me for things, I think they were right when it comes to like not knowing that LBL was won four times by Valverde. But if I can give a solid excuse for that, it's the fact that I don't really care about the ass finish. We'll talk about that a bit later on here. But
let me do the results. I'll stop attacking the listeners attacking you, and then you defending the listeners attacking you to see which one of us is the nice one. But yeah, you should definitely go with Benji, because Balabalin winning Liège four times. I watch it every night before I go to sleep. The results. Pogacar first, Alaphilippe second, Gaudu third, French second and third, but no winner. Valverde fourth, Woods fifth, Hirschi sixth after attacking behind with Benoit and Mollema. Schachmann, ninth, Mohoric, 10th, back-to-back. Is that back-to-back top 10s in Liège? Ineos, Benji. Let's talk about that before we get to the on finish. If Ineos were named Movistar and wore blue jerseys, seriously, wouldn't they be getting absolutely roasted by everybody for what happened today? Or is it different because Carapaz still went up the road and had a chance?
Yeah, I think that wasn't the smartest idea, but I think that people also shouldn't criticize Ineos here too much, because I think it's the only way they could potentially have won this race is by trying something extreme like that. I don't believe that Carapaz was going to win the sprint. We've seen him do a decent sprint in Polonia, I think, a few years ago, but I still wouldn't expect it here. And yeah, when it comes to that team, they had strength in numbers and strength across the board, but not one extreme leader like a Pidcock who would end up being able to sprint like that. And that's just not the case here. And I think that that is their excuse here. I think when it comes to strategies all over, I want to highlight something else. How dare Astana use Aramburu to close down gaps and attack with 70k to go? I hate it. How they massacred my
boy. It was so fucking stupid. Okay, so this finish, headwind sprint, headwind on the climbs. We had after the race, the women's race, which I know we reversed it, but preceded the men's race. Van Vleuten in the finish interview was like, the headwind on the final climb, the final was really strong. And Jakob Fuglsang, I'm not sure if anyone's been watching, but where the fuck is he going to put 15 seconds into Pogacar, Alaphilippe and Woods on these climbs in 2021? Like, what are they doing having Aramburu spend his bickies with 60Ks to go when he can actually win a reduced bunch sprint, or at least podium? Say, probably he's not going to outclimb Matthews. Maybe he could have attacked on the final descent or something. I don't know. They should have been wanting, like we said in the preview, a slow race. And yeah, I didn't get it. Aramburu had a better chance of winning Liège-Bastogne-Liège today than Jakob Fuglsang, who came 12th, you know, in that G2, middling in G2, and not winning the reduced bunch sprint there either. So made no sense. Maybe Benji and I are overrating Aramburu, but I don't know. It's like, here's the thing. Bike Exchange has Chavez and Matthews. Matthews for the sprint, Chavez for climbing, maybe if it's really quick climbs at the end. They don't use Matthews to close moves with 60Ks to go. So, sorry, did I cut you off, Benji? I was so enraged.
No, I don't actually remember what I said. So I think that's relatively what you are.
You're mad about
what
Aaron
you needed
Burry.
To say. Yeah, I'm just sad about Adam Budowitz. They massacred my boy. But all in all, I think that it was a good race. And I want to bring up the point that I also brought up on Twitter before and after the race. Let's talk about the finishes. In the past, up to 3 years ago, we had the Côte d'Or as the finishing point of Liège-Bastogne-Liège, which had a bit of a curve in the last 200 meters and then a sprint to the line. Now, I hate that finish. They waited so long a lot of the times, and I don't know why, but I just didn't like that climb. I don't know why. Now, the difference is much different, because now we come to Rochefoucauld. We know that a smaller group will form out of that. We've seen it 2 years in a row now. And my heart beats from that entire point at 120. I'm literally almost dying in the Dedalen. It's not that high, but still, it's crazy how it makes me so nervous in the last 10 kilometers that descent. Will somebody try to attack before the sprint? Stuff like that. And just that aspect to it is so much more fun than being on awe and then seeing, oh, there's someone punching away. Okay, that's it. I barely cared about Liège-Bastogne-Liège for a lot of years until they changed the finish. And then I saw, oh my God, this is good. And last year was an amazing race as a consequence. The last portion, at least. Today, I think the last 30 kilometers were a very good race, in my opinion. I think since Latitude, it was really fun to watch. And it would have been so much different if they had another hill in the last kilometer, because that would close down the race way more. And there were people that are like, oh, I'm saving my energy for the all finish. Yeah, I like it way more like this, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, well, Paul's respecters win in 2016, but if I'm going back to make a throwback analysis video, that won't be the most exciting sort of race I'd ever go and pick. You know, Paul's Albacini, Rui Costa, Sanchez sort of guys in a kick up to all. No thanks. I really like this where you got the pressure of the group behind. It's kind of like we saw an Amstel Gold race the last couple of years in the men and women's. It's like MSR, like I said, are they going to be caught, etc. if they play too much? Maybe they nearly did today. Another thing we want to talk about, Benji, I just saw this come across on Twitter. Richard Carapaz has been disqualified from Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Now, it's of no moment because he was caught and didn't get a good result anyway. But with 19 kilometers to go, and I'm showing you the image on the YouTube video now, he entered what looked like a super tuck position to me. And I thought it was a super tuck. His hands were on his bars, not his hands were on his bars, and his butt was kind of off his saddle, and you couldn't see from the angle too well whether he was touching the top tube or not. But yeah, what do you think about this disqualification, Benji? Did you see it from a different angle where you could see him above the top tube?
For me, it looks like it's touching him, but I can't tell it. Like, I'm pretty sure he's above the top tube. Like, he's way too high to be on the top tube here, on the picture that I'm looking at least. And from what I can tell, the only thing I can say is that technically it looks like he's touching the saddle. It looks like he's in the drops. It looks like he's not touching the top tube. It's obviously looking for the borders and the edges of the UCI rules here. But on paper, I'd say this is completely allowed by the current rule. And yeah, I'd say that it's not really disqualifiable, even though it's obviously looking for the plot holes in the rule, which is something that will happen if you've got huge plot holes in the rules, as we've said multiple times. But next to that, it also just doesn't look like a very comfortable position, to be honest.
I know. Is it even aero? Let me try and find the rule bit, Benji. So this is the new rule that came in on the 1st of April. Position on the bicycle. Riders must observe the standard position as defined by, oh God, I'm going to have to go to the other article. Okay. As defined by Article 1.3.08, which I'll put up on the screen, but I'm not going to look at right now, but it's not really relevant. It just means like sitting in a standard position. Sit, but this is the more important point. Sitting on the bicycle's top tube is prohibited. Furthermore, using forearms as a point of support is prohibited. But he's not doing the forearms thing. So it's sitting on the bicycle's top tube. And maybe they got images, Benji, that he was sitting on the top tube. I mean, if he's in that position for a fair amount of time, maybe, I mean, I don't want to make a crass joke, but if he's not on the top tube, then I don't know what he's using as a means of support. Looks really uncomfortable. If he's not touching the top tube, it looks like his thighs might be squeezing them. So do you think his thighs are squeezing the top tube, Benji, and that's sort of using it as a means of support? Do you think the UCI have even thought into it that deeply, or they're just like, nah, kind of looks like a super tuck, man?
Yeah, I think that what's curious about all of this is that we have these rules vaguely written in the rule book, and then the riders have received a PowerPoint presentation that included a few pictures of what you can do and what you can't do. And that's another example. Like, I think the rider that was disqualified for using his forearms for support but had his pinky on his brakes.
Alexander.
Yeah.
The British guy on Alpecin, right?
Richardson, I think. No?
Yeah. And, Alexander Richardson.
That was a disqualification. And in that PowerPoint presentation, it indeed was labeled as you can't do this. But the thing is, there's a problem to this because those images are not in the rules. And how is that usable if they're not in the rules? Unless there's another rules book that we don't know about.
And it's not like, putting the lawyer hat on, it's not like I don't know about what you all do in civil law land, which makes no sense to me, but in Australia you can have law as enacted by parliament and then regulations underneath which are subordinate to the actual parliamentary legislation but do have actual binding force. They can be like created more flexibly by non-like governing bodies or departments, etc. You know, so you have a rule, you can't drive down the street in a particular fashion, and then the regulations, which the legislation will refer to, which is a key point Benji's making, the actual rules in his sense should refer to the diagrams in regulation XYZ, show diagrammatically the permitted and not permitted positions and flesh it out further, and they can be changed from time to time. So we don't have that. We just have a PowerPoint presentation that comes to light after the fact, not really shared with the media, not that anyone would share anything with us anyway. But that's the Carapaz disqualification. Didn't really change the outcome of Liège. Just another data point in that riders trying to be sneaky will get relegated or disqualified. And to be honest, I'm not surprised. I thought they were going to disqualify him, just like the Richardson thing. I feel like if you're deliberately pushing the grey areas and it looks kind of unsafe, you're going to get done. Seems to be the flavour of the month.
I think there's a difference here that if the Richardson thing was actually like in the rule itself, it says that you can't use your form of sense as support in the Richardson thing. So that is literally on paper. So that.
Yeah, and he was using them as support.
Yeah. So that's for me the difference between the two cases personally. But yeah,
maybe Benji.
You are.
Is there a super tuck diagram somewhere? Does anyone want to send a super tuck diagram? Poor old Carapaz. Yeah. But I thought he was going to get done. Maybe someone's got better images that they can show us where they can see him on the top tube. But these guys have all been practicing it. I remember the first day it came in, Wout van Aert was practicing a sort of revised aero position. But yeah, that's a bit, not a shame, just interesting. And more things for us to talk about. The next topic we wanted to hit for Liège-Bastogne-Liège was, can Tadej Pogačar win all five monuments? And I guess he can win all three Grand Tours. We don't really need to discuss that, but he's won Liège now. It's going to come first or second last year. What's your gut reaction, Benji?
So he has won. We know that, obviously. Well, this one. I think that looking at the other monuments out there, I think Il Lombardia is one that he can win.
Yeah,
that seems to be one that is doable. Then we have three left, Roubaix, RVV, and Sanremo. Sanremo is going to be difficult in the sense that it's not easy to predict what will happen in in Sanremo, and he doesn't seem to have the punch to drop people like crazy on the Poggio, so he'd need to be in a reduced group to do so after the Poggio. And then he's got the kick to beat the likes of an Alaphilippe, and we've seen Alaphilippe being in a position of winning Milan Sanremo quite a few times. He's was second after Van Aert in that sprint, if I recall correctly. And he ended up winning ahead of
Kwiatkowski 2017.
Yes, exactly. And also, didn't he win one against Oliver Nasen in second as well the year before? But yeah,
yes.
He's been in a lot of positions where he could win. So Pogacar can also be in that position. But the difference is that Poggi doesn't have as much of an acceleration as Alaphilippe has in the Poggio part of things. So that might be more difficult, but I do see it as possible. There's definitely an option for it. Just not going to be easy. He just needs to ride it a lot of times to try, and then it might happen. When it comes to
like Arvidia each time, Roubaix, can I just jump in on MSR? I think agree. For each time he can go into the race, if UAE make him their 100% leader with like a 7 to 8% chance of winning, which is that's pretty good, 7 to 8% chance of winning, and that's like 12-14 to 1. But the problem is he'll have Wout van Aert and VDP there. So it's not like when Nibali won, you've got like the sprinters who can't climb, or can sprinters not climb? But I'm just saying.
Are you attacking Nibali?
Yes, I am. But I'm just saying with Wout van Aert and MVDP at the moment, I don't envision the Nibali scenario happening. Because as Benji said, if Pogacar goes, you'd think that Alaphilippe would be right there with him. It's a game of chance. He's just got to keep throwing the dice for the next 10, 15 years, and hopefully it pays off. But that's the hardest one. Ask Peter Sagan. He was favorite like 6 years in a row. It's damn hard to win Milano Sanremo. Roubaix, Benji.
So Roubaix and RVV, I put them in this. Well, they're not really the same, is it? I think that Tour of Flanders is definitely more possible than Roubaix in the sense that he's got the climbing abilities to get over it. Look where Nibali came. I think 22nd, 23rd or so in the year that he tried.
Alaphilippe's the better comp.
Was looking good as well. Alaphilippe, but Alaphilippe has the benefit of also having the more punchy side than Poggi. Well. But I think when it comes to cobbles, I've seen video footage of Poggi relatively flying over Carrefour de l'Arbre a few years ago on a training ride. So I believe that he can ride cobbles. We've seen him on the gravel section where he was not looking amazing. At the end of the Tour de France, that's the one counterpoint I'm like, oh, I'm not sure.
That's the end of a climb.
Yeah, and after that, the Tour de France as well.
Physiologically suffering.
Yeah, I think that he can win RVV if he builds a season towards it and if he preps that completely for it. We know that from even, for example, the Tirreno stage that he almost came close to beating Van der Poel, that he has the endurance to win a crazy stage like that, and he proved that, well, in LBL as well. So that part is secure for me. I think that RVDV is doable. Now, the most difficult one, I think, well, perhaps next to Milano Sanremo, will be Paris-Roubaix. I think that...
Disagree.
You think he's doable? I think it's doable, but I think it's going to be harder.
He's a swimmer. He loves wet, cold conditions.
How long has it been since it's been rained in Roubaix when it actually happened?
Well, it's only 17 years, right? 17, 16 years?
It's not that long. Yes, 7 years to go, so.
October. We're having it in October. I don't know, you live there. Does it rain in October in Roubaix? Probably. It seems to rain most of the time, except on the day of Paris-Roubaix during April for the last 15, 16 years. He loves wet conditions. He loves the cold. He just seems to have this... this tank that you can just constantly replenish, you know, whereas MVDP in the cold at Tirreno done cooked himself and he was like, I couldn't push 200 watts at the end. Pogacar could have kept going for another hour, it seemed, you know, another 5Ks, he would have won that stage. I know that's got more climbing than Paris-Roubaix, but the point is, it's an endurance race. He seems to have incredible endurance. He's good in bad conditions. His handling is outstanding. Will he ever be the favorite for Roubaix? No, of course not. But I think MSR is so hard, such a lottery, whereas he does actually have certain advantages in Roubaix. And I think they might – he's just a gamer, to use an American term. He just wants to ride every race. Even the ones that don't theoretically suit a Grand Tour contender. I think if he wants to have a good result at Roubaix, this is the year. April Roubaix, I mean, you can fuck yourself up and then your Tour de France is done. If you do a collarbone or even something not that bad, it can affect you. If these guys are off the bike for 3 weeks, it can affect their whole TDF preparation, even though it's months out because they got to peak at the right time, etc. Roubaix in October, nothing's after, I don't think. So this would be a great year for him to really have a go at it, but he'd probably be pretty tired. Isn't he doing the Vuelta as well? So, but yeah, you think he's ever a chance of going into Roubaix as a top 10 contender?
I think if he plans a season towards it, yeah. But I think winning it will be hard, knowing that we've got so much talent on the cobble side of things as well. You know, Kasper Asgreen, for example, this man's not going to stop very soon with trying to win Roubaix now because, well, it's the one he doesn't have of the two. So that's definitely a rider I see himself keeping doing that. Mats Pedersen as well. It's one of his main goals. Seneschal wants to win Roubaix as well. So there's so many riders that also are very young that have so many years to come and can definitely point towards that race. And I think that we're going to see that expanded for the next few years as well, that it's going to be hard in the initial years. And it's also hard because then he needs to start making decisions. And Pogacar now is arguably the best Grand Tour rider we have in the world, in my opinion. And
you can't do it all.
That exactly, you can't do it all, and you need to plan your season towards what. Why do you think that, for example, an Alaphilippe would not do it until last year going to RVV? Because he wanted to win other stuff beforehand, and now he's found a way to combine the Cossacks and the Ardennes Alaphilippe, and it's not going perfectly either.
I know, and I'd argue he stretched himself a bit too thin,
yep,
as well.
Yeah, and I think that's the question indeed. Will Pogacar win all three Grand Tours in the next 3 years? Probably. He'll win all three, but will he decide it's enough?
Have you heard of Remco Evenepoel?
Yeah, but that's for after the 3 years. I'm fine with them sharing.
Right. Okay, true. They'll just split them, etc. after Froome wins this year at the Tour. Yeah, I think it's possible Pogacar can win all five monuments, but I think it's extremely unlikely. Anything's possible, but I think no. Like the scheduling, etc. You know, how's he going to do Lombardy in 1 year? He's going to want to do the Vuelta. I just don't see it happening.
How many in which ones?
I think he wins Lombardia, and that's it. I don't think he wins the other three.
I think he wins Lombardia and RVV, and that's it.
Maybe. We'll see. It's RVV's tough. He'll have to want to do a different program or maybe just do what Alaphilippe's doing. But anyway, that was our men's recap and then discussion about Tadej Pogacar winning all five monuments. It's possible, but we don't really see it happening. Let us know what you think in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. But now stay tuned for the women's race recap. Really interesting race that we just watched really early. Great time, these women's races. If you're in Australia, maybe not so good in America, but it finishes at a civilized time. 140Ks, same last, I would say, 40Ks plus as the men's race. They go from Bastogne to Liège, but the finale you really need to know about is the Redoute, 2Ks, 9%, 35Ks from the finish. They then have Roly section, and then they have the Côte de la Rochefoucauld, I think 13Ks from the finish, Boncel straight after, then the 11Ks descent flat run into Liège, that you know the full sang sort of descent 2019, and they had it last year as well. So favourites, you know all the big names, Van der Breggen. Omissions, probably just Deignan, last year's winner, and Grace Brown, who came second. But Benji, live coverage started with 47Ks. To go, what was the race situation? I think you, Benji's SD Works new DS from the sound of it, once he tells us what happened.
So basically, we expected some teams to try and put themselves in a better position by having a pawn in the breakaway to force other teams to pace in the peloton. We saw that in Flèche Wallonne with the likes of Trek doing so. And now, well, we said that SD Works should do this because they haven't done it too much throughout the season. I think in Strade Bianche they tried as well with Fisher Black, and they did it again today. So that was great to see, because this basically forces other teams to try and take control in the group behind and have them pace that rider from his D-works back. And Fisher Black is honestly a really good rider. And the advantage of teams like his D-works and Trek is that next to their very strong leadership, they also have pretty strong secondaries. And those outsiders, they can do some damage. And if you have a Fisher Black in the breakaway, then you can force Trek to need a three-woman train at the front of the group to try and slowly but surely thin down the gap and catch Fisher Black again. And that's what they tried to do. And that's basically what they did by the foot of Ladder Dude. But it certainly did some damage. And with Trek also missing Roof Winde here, who was unfortunately a close contact before the race with a COVID person. Well, she was unable to come at the start. So that's one person that they're missing in this potential chase, and true, one pawn that they can't use in the race that had to be taken out. But all in all, very strong move by Fisher Black. Very clever. It brought Trek into spending energy mode. And they unfortunately
caught her at Flesh.
Yeah, exactly. They just
did the same again. But yeah, brought back before Redoute. Who attacked first on Redoute? They brought it all back. It was SD Works again, right?
Yes. I think we had an attack of pretty much three women at that point. At the starting point of Ladadut, we saw that Moulman Passio was moving up. And Moulman, we saw attacking Fledgeville on early as well. That didn't really work out. But in this situation, they still had the numerical advantage if she attacked. So she had the option of doing so at the start of Ladadut, and she did so. Cavalli reacted, and also Alred for the team of Movistar, Cavalli for FDG, obviously. And those three women had a bit of a gap, and we saw them hammer it up Ladder Dude from the first section. But we also saw that, well, Moulman Passio is a pretty damn strong rider, that is very certain. And she was able to, first of all, drop Cavalli, because Cavalli is decent at climbing, but she's not up there with the other two. And Aldud was strong already this Ardennes portion of the season, so she was able to hold on a bit longer with Moulman, but eventually that really didn't work out either. But we saw a response once Cavalli was taken out in the second group again, and that was from a teammate, right?
Yeah, FDJ, I mean, a bit curious, attacking with Cavalli. I'm pretty sure Cavalli should just look at what Marianne Vos does in every single race and try and copy that. She's the same style of rider, in my opinion. FDJ attacked with Ludwig, and this is what we said she needs to be doing, attacking early on La Redoute, not waiting for the last climbs, because she isn't the best sprinter, and she isn't the best climber either, if we're going to be honest, on these climbs compared to AVDB and Van Vleuten and Longaborghini. She reminds me a lot of Bauke Mollema, actually, and she needs to attack at the right moment. She's good enough to win if the other teams finesse and don't chase, and so it was a really good move from her. Fantastic move, actually. Really liked seeing her doing that. On Redoute, no one immediately reacted. She goes up the road. I think she was then joined. No, she caught Moulman. Moulman joins on with her. Moulman, by the way, like Zwift World Champion, right? On a pure per kilo basis, top class. So it's no surprise she's so good uphill. She has been for ages. And then they get to the top of Redoute. The favorites have had a few skirmishes behind, like Longaborghini, Van Vleuten, Nuvia Doma, but no real big attacks. And it's Brandt for Trek bridging across. So we've got two secondary riders in the group of three ahead and one pure leader with Ludwig on this ridgeline above La Redoute. Vos is desperately trying to close that gap, which may be a mistake in hindsight, because the group swelled behind, got really big again with no one really taking up the chase, and those three riders working together, I think, with it was over 20Ks to go, I think about 27Ks to go. They had a 15-second gap. They had 3Ks to the next small climb, the Côte des Forges. Moulman Passio started sitting on and finessing, which I didn't really get it, because if the point of her being there was to be a satellite rider, which is why Brand was in that group, then wouldn't you want to make it to Rochefoucauld ahead so that if AVDB or Van Vleuten bridge, you can be there and be caught, just like when Ludwig caught her. But anyway, she was finessing, not pulling on the flat. Brand was pulling like 80%. They didn't close him on that climb, the Forge. Canyon Schramm were doing a lot of the pacing, with Shabby, I think, doing a lot of it for Nuvia Doma. 20Ks to go, they're closed down before Rochefoucauld. And Chantal van den Broek Black is still in the group. She moves to the front for SD Works, who've been on the front foot all day in this race. She's got Van der Breggen on her wheel, Vollering in the group, Niefischer Black in the group. They basically got the whole team in the group. And Rochefoucauld starts the hardest climb in this race. I think, 1.9Ks, 1.2Ks, 11%. I think it says on my profile. Pretty steep and nasty, just like the Murder Wee. Van der Breggen starts pacing the minute they get there at a steady pace. No attack. She doesn't even look behind her, pacing. And it's clear the strategy for SD Works is we are not going to have a repeat of Amstel Gold Race. We are going to drop Marianne Vos. And we don't care if Longo Borghini, Van Vleuten, and Nivea Doma are in this group, as long as we have Demi Vollering. So already that was a big sign that SD Works were riding for Demi Vollering. Van der Breggen not attacking, basically pacing for herself. Vos is holding on. 150 meters to go. She just starts dropping. Ludwig, she drops herself, basically. Benji, do you think she could have held on to G1 if she rode more conservatively?
I think so, because we saw her make a bit of a move on the left side of the road there on that Rochefoucauld, and that's not the kind of move you do when you're relatively near the limit. And I think it was a bit of an all or nothing move eventually, because that immediately dropped her back to the back of the group, and she started suffering as much as Marianne Vos was doing in the last 150 meters. And they both cracked with that tiny margin to the top. But the thing is, this is not done when you reach the top of Rochefoucauld. You've got a tiny descent, and then we go back onto a bit of a false flat section before we have a hill once again. And the problem is, if you drop already here, then you're likely to drop just after. And we kind of expected that to happen then. I did, at least. And we come to the top of Rochefoucauld. We have the gap on Marianne Vos. Not that large. 15 seconds, 10 seconds, I think. It wasn't large. And this is where SD Works started to make a tiny mistake, I think, because we saw that Monpasio was on a good 5 seconds behind that group at the front. And then Marianne Vos another 10 seconds behind that, roughly. Let's say that's the gaps, roughly. This means that, well, SD Works at the front needs to make the decision. Either we keep on pacing like this, or we wait the 5 seconds that Monpasio needs to come back to this group, and then we start pacing. And at the start, they didn't make that decision, but then they did. And they waited for Monpasio. Vollering stopped pacing. Moman came to the back of the group, and I expected her to move forward, move to the front of the group, and just keep on pedaling, because she needed to, because Marianne Vos is coming behind. She's coming back, and they didn't. Monpasio just stayed at the back. And I don't
get it. They left it up for Nivea Doma.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
That was, I thought they'd almost stuffed the race, because it was perfection on Rochefoucauld from Van der Breggen. They got exactly what they wanted. And then Vollering started pacing. And I think Van der Breggen was like, Demi, why are you pacing? we want you in the sprint. Anyway, all's well that ends well. As Benji said, there's no time to recover. Vos gets back with Ludwig, but by the time they get back, they're just getting onto this next climb, the Boncel, 1.2Ks at 6.3%. It's got steep sections too. It's narrow, and then they've got a 10K descent / flat run into the finish, and Van Vleuten attacks on that Boncel climb. Van der Breggen was pacing, then Van Vleuten tried to attack. The fact that Van Vleuten couldn't get any purchase probably meant that pace from Van der Breggen was pretty high, and it drops everybody else pretty much. It's just those two. Van der Breggen sits on, Van Vleuten stops her action because of Van der Breggen's presence, and it allows Vollering, Nivea Doma, and Longo Borghini to catch back up. Vos gone, Utrup Ludwig gone, and Mulman gone, not helping those two, Vos and Ludwig, obviously. And you got to remember, Vos has gone pretty deep into the well now for the last 20 minutes almost to catch back up. And now Van der Breggen, she just gets on the front now with this group and puts it into fifth gear and doesn't take it off, 350 watts, I think, for the next 10 kilometers, Benji. They didn't care about Longo Borghini, Van Vleuten, and Nivea Doma in this group. They got Vollering there. We saw an Amstel Gold Race. I'll show you the finish I've shown you in the YouTube video and in the pod. Vollering hit the line super hard. She's clearly the second best sprinter out of this group of G1 and G2 after Voss, and they've dropped Voss, so they're not concerned by the others. So they bring that gap out of Van der Breggen pacing to 30 seconds. Voss is gone. We know it's going to be from the front group. The question is, will Van Vleuten, Nieuwiedoma, and Longaborghini, what will they do? You can't go to the line with Vollering, but do you have any choice? Based on Amstel Gold Race, I would have thought Lisa Longaborghini would have attacked because she doesn't trust her sprint. But anyway, Van der Breggen paces, headwind. They turn right into the final kilometer from this group of five in order. Got Van der Breggen on the front, Nieuwiedoma second wheel, not in a good spot. Van Vleuten third wheel, Vollering fourth wheel. Longaborghini's move back to be fifth wheel. Van der Breggen increases the pace, perfect lead out, and drops. It's actually better when you've got Vollering fourth wheel to drop the other riders off a little bit early, and that's what happened into this headwind. You've got Van Vleuten start her sprint early on the right-hand side around Nieuwiedoma, but Vollering's right on her wheel, gets the slipstream, and begins her sprint to the middle and wins by over a bike length ahead of Van Vleuten second, who was able to hold it, and Longaborghini third, beating Nieuwiedoma in the sprint, Van der Breggen fifth, then Voss winning the reduced bunch behind. What'd you make of that finale, Benji? Picture perfect tactics, just about almost in the last 30Ks by SD Works.
Yes, almost, but we can't look at that too much because they basically did what we thought they would or hoped they would do to try and take this race home with Dami Vollering. We said at the start of the season that Dami was moving up in the rankings, coming from Parc Hotel, doing really well at these Ardennes last year. And, well, she stepped up again this year. And she's not at the level yet that she's going to dominate it yet, because we said she could replace the likes of Van der Breggen or Van Vleuten in the ranks in the future. I don't feel like we're at that level yet, but she's definitely nearing it. I feel like on the climbs itself, she sometimes does look that she has trouble hanging on to, for example, a move by Van Vleuten on the latter section just after Rochefoucauld, where that attack was coming. That's where I was like,
she got dropped on Bonsell.
Yeah, exactly. That's just the point where I'm like, ooh, this needs to be a tiny bit better if you want to dominate these races in the future. But she's already at such a level where she has the advantage of having a sprint. So she doesn't necessarily need to drop all the others in the process. She just needs to drop Voss, and they did that today. And while they made that tiny mistake in that descent portion that allowed Voss to come back, perhaps they knew that the section afterward was tough enough. But then again, it was Van Vleuten who actually formally dropped Marano Voss afterwards to a point where she could not come back. I think that it was a good race. I really enjoyed it, and I'm really happy to see that Dami Vollering is finally getting that deserved victory I was hoping for the entire season so far. And it came just when we hoped it would, on paper, most important classic, Ardennes Classic at least.
Well, the thing is, I mean, it's not like Anna van der Breggen was like, oh, wouldn't it be great if I just give someone else on my team a victory? This was the best way for SD Works to win this race. The sprint of Vollering without Voss being in the group is the trump card, because Van Vleuten and Anna van der Breggen, it kind of neutralize each other or nerf each other or cancel each other out, particularly when Van der Breggen, apart from Murderhui, I know that not been as like otherworldly dominant this year, just riding away from everybody, kind of the same with Van Vleuten too, apart from Flanders, obviously, not doing it every race. So with those two marking at each other, well, I've got the teammate who's got the trump card sprint. And so perfect from Van der Breggen. She's going to make a great DS and tactician next year at SD Works. Can't wait to see her make that transition. So you think, Benji, going back to the other riders that came, didn't win, Longaborghini, Nieuwiedoma, and Van Vleuten, was there anything they could do in the final 5Ks? There's no real pinches. It's all flat, bit of a headwind. I don't really think there is, because if Van der Breggen's going to come fifth in the group of five, you're basically losing out your chance of a podium of a monument if you attack, because you'll just get chased down.
Yeah, you're right. I think that in the latter portion, we saw Longaborghini make one split decision mistake in the last portion where she decided to take over from Van der Breggen, who was pacing in the group in the last 5 kilometers. I was like, okay, you should be at the back right now. prepping your attack or sprint, whatever you're going to go for, but you should not be taking over from an SDWorks rider who is riding for Vollering. I didn't get that moment. She quickly realized that that wasn't a good idea and went to the back again. But that was a tiny thing. I was like, okay. But when it comes to Van Vleuten, I'm curious. In general, she usually goes for multiple attacks, and now she went for that one attack after the top of Rochefoucauld and Boncel. And I think perhaps the race would have been a slight bit different if she went for La Redoute already, if she tried to demolish the numerical advantage of the others there already. Because let's say that she goes on the move there. She goes early on La Redoute and she makes that move. And she does it again on not Rochefoucauld, but perhaps Boncel. Would you still have Vollering, or would she have completely dropped on Boncel? Because now it was relatively close to dropping there. So
you're
I don't
right.
know, perhaps Van Vleuten could be doing something more, but that's a hindsight thing. I would never have said in the race, I should attack her, even though I like said it in the preview, but still. I think that that's the one thing I'm like, perhaps that could go different, but it's not, I won't classify it as a mistake. I'll classify it as perhaps, yeah, that could have gone better.
No, you're right. Honing in on that, what Benji's talking about is Boncel, all the other riders apart from Van der Breggen are cooked. Van Vleuten attacks and she stops her action after ABDB shuts her down and basically allows Vollering to come back into the group. Perhaps, you know, what does she do then, Benji? If she keeps it going, does ABDB sit on? I think that was her plan. So it was tough for Van Vleuten. That's why SDWorks team strength today was perfect. Trek, definitely missing Ruth Winder, as we said at the top of the show.
Yeah.
She's been so strong in the Ardennes, won Brabantse-Pale, and Amstel was really, really good, as well as Flesch. So,
yeah,
tough for them without her, as well as Deignan, Elisa Longaborghini. She should be pretty happy, I think, with podium spot in Liège, actually. But that was our women's Liège-Bastogne-Liège recap. Really enjoyable race. I'll have my highlight video up, hopefully today, if I can get to it quickly. There's a gap now before the men's race. But otherwise, give the video a like down below if you watched it. Give us a rating on podcast players if you haven't already, if that's where you listen. And what's next, Benji? Romandy coming up, I think.
Yes, Romandy coming up. And it's basically a preparation race for the Giro. And the Giro is the race I look forward to most every season because it's my favorite Grand Tour, and it's arguably one of my three favorite races in the season. LBL wasn't that, but I still very much enjoyed the Remons race. I don't know why. We should do a ranking the monuments video at some point because
yeah, probably
people might be surprised with LBL being at the bottom of mine.
LBL, MSR. I don't like Tour of Flanders. Tour of Flanders at the bottom. All right. With Benji triggered, that's where we'll leave it today, and we'll see you with Romandy next week. Ciao.